You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this special evening edition of WrestleNomics Radio. Not Sunday at 11 a.m. Eastern, but today is Monday at 5 p.m. Eastern. It is March the 4th, 2024. We are now more than 12 hours removed from the final conclusion of AEW Revolution, where I was up until, I think, 2:30 last night. Following the events of the press conference and things of that nature. But today on the program, we will discuss the business of AEW Revolution, as well as we've got some news here. I think it's news. Some details coming out of the TKO annual report that was released on Tuesday that nobody has realized, I think. We'll take a look at that. Related to Vince McMahon and his various payments. We will talk about WWE versus my new tag team partner, Ken Paxton. What else? We'll touch on merchandise and closed circuit pay-per-view in theaters before we go. So here's the slides. First of all, before we get into more, we had a talk, I guess, just a week ago. I was thinking, looking at these slides before I went live here, and was it only a week ago we talked to Nick Kaniski as part of Pollock and Thurston? There's a written article version of that as well. If you haven't already listened to that or read the article with Nick Kaniski, who was a wrestler for the WF around 1986-87, and says he was propositioned by Terry Garvin. And we also talked to, on this past Wednesday, John Arezzi of the Wrestling Spotlight about his experience covering the scandals surrounding WWF in 1992. But today is a free version of WrestleNomics Radio, free for everybody. Usually this is, you gotta pay for this. This is a free preview this week, as it is every first week of the month that I do this. It's free for everybody. But otherwise, if you want to listen to this or watch it every week, it is part of the Patreon at patreon.com/WrestleNomics, along with the big TV ratings reports. We should have one today sometime. Haven't seen the SmackDown rating yet. I don't have it yet. Nobody else who reports TV ratings, as far as I know, have it yet. If it comes to my attention that the TV rating is available while I'm on the air, I will read it to you. But you get the TV ratings reports that I do. You get the access to the data, monthly reports, slides, etc. And this program every week. Okay. AEW Revolution. Sting's last match. Very well-reviewed show. We'll touch on that. But we got to talk about first. Bleacher Report. As I was among the many victims who purchased the pay-per-view, dropped my $50 plus some sort of fee from Apple TV and could not immediately watch the program at 8 o'clock Eastern. And this resulted in Tony Khan tweeting saying that you can now buy it on Fight as well. And Fight is usually only an international carrier. Now also a US carrier on that occasion. This seems to have something to do with the transactions. And I would think just maybe Bleacher Report not being able to handle that many transactions that are happening all at one time as the pay-per-view is about to start. I think the vast majority of people don't buy the pay-per-view in advance of the pay-per-view starting. So I don't know what this is, an ongoing tradition here of Bleacher Report having issues. Of course, Bleacher Report is owned by Warner Brothers Discovery. More on Warner Brothers Discovery later. That's AEW's big TV partner. But we'll touch on the attendance. AWPR tweeted this big photo of the Greensboro Coliseum last night. And we have a number from WrestleTix. I don't think there is an updated number from WrestleTix. I'll check my email. Of course, this was virtually a sellout. Oh, I do have a rating for SmackDown. I will read it to you in a moment. But do we have, I don't think we have a WrestleTix number here. A final number. But the latest number we have, I believe this is from yesterday, over 16,000 tickets distributed, 16,052. AEW announced on the broadcast itself an announced number of 16,878. So some 800 higher than the most recent estimate from WrestleTix. It could just be the case that the 16,878 is a legitimate number of tickets distributed for this event here at the Greensboro Coliseum, which was essentially a sellout. I think the only tickets you could really get were probably platinum tickets or, of course, resale. Very well-received show. Let's look at how this stacks up against all of the other AEW pay-per-views throughout time. If we share this tab, this coming directly from the Inmates at Cage Match. And this pay-per-view right now, a live look at the web browser, this pay-per-view right now is sitting at a 9.44 with 316 votes in, which is within the realm of what these other pay-per-views have got as far as votes. So we don't have, it's not like there's hundreds, there could be hundreds of votes to come in, but we've got a substantial number is what I'm getting at. Is this the most highly rated AEW pay-per-view of all time? No. It is, I believe, only the second most highly rated AEW pay-per-view of all time on Cage Match. All Out 2021, the show where CM Punk returned in Chicago. That is still more highly rated with a 9.54. Let me sort this. And it is number, it is the number two pay-per-view, last night's pay-per-view. The number three pay-per-view in terms of a rating is the last year's AEW Revolution at a 9.23. So, well-received pay-per-view from at least the Cage Match voters. Looking at, I decided to make this chart earlier today, just looking at the pay-per-view slash PLE event ratings over time, breaking this down across AEW, Ring of Honor, WWE Main Roster, and WNXT. Are there any strong takeaways here other than the obvious that the AEW pay-per-views perform exceptionally well for the most part, with some exceptions? That pay-per-view that they did prior to Revolution, which was called what? World's End. That one, not so great. A 5.64, which I think is the lowest rated AEW pay-per-view ever, just edging out All Out 2020. So are there takeaways to be had here? The NXT pay-per-views, PLEs, have improved in reception over time. There's definitely a before and after effect that's noticeable here when it comes to the WWE main roster pay-per-views, where they're all over the map in the Vince era. And then in the post Vince McMahon's first resignation era, they perform the floor is much higher, right? They don't go below a six or just under a six. Anyway, what else? There was a media scrum. This is not a media scrum. It's a press conference, but they call it a scrum. A scrum is where it's something I've looked it up because I was concerned with this issue. A scrum is something that's associated with rugby, where people stand around in like a gaggle or something. But really in a media scrum, you've got people standing around asking other people questions and everyone's standing. No one's standing in this situation. They're all sitting. This is a press conference. Anyway, they've called it a scrum for years. Let's discuss first the media call that was held on Thursday that I did participate in. And I asked Tony Khan a question about the discipline committee. So coming out of World's End, surrounding World's End, there were rumors, reports, certainly conversation about whether or not whether there were allegations of misconduct against Chris Jericho. There were questions about that subject at the press conference. And one of the talking points that Tony Khan was using was that he has a discipline committee. He has an open door and anybody could talk to him, or they can go to the discipline committee. And I think one of the important questions to ask is, who's on the discipline committee? And here's that exchange from Thursday.
I'm wondering if you could tell us who the members are of AW's discipline committee, and do those members have experience in how to handle sexual misconduct claims if they come up?
That's a great question. We have trained professionals on the discipline committee, including two attorneys and Brian Danielson. And Brian, they're different backgrounds, and that's the idea, to have people from different backgrounds and different experiences in wrestling, which is certainly its own unique business with its own unique set of challenges. And I think I want people that have common goals for the company and for the well-being of the wrestlers, and also people that share high integrity. And the attorneys that I chose and Brian Danielson, I think that's a really strong group of people. And they would be looking out against all misconduct claims. And we've tried to train them up to do their best, I think, to really, whatever the situation is in terms of misconduct, to do whatever it takes to ensure the well-being of the wrestlers, which is first and foremost here above everything else. Thank you, Brandon.
He didn't name who the attorneys were. That would be nice to know. Who are those attorneys? Are they people who actually work regularly? Are they full-time employees for AEW, or are these people who are more independent? I was told as well, because I know this was a question that was asked and, sort of just, online in response to this subject being brought up in the media call. Is there a way for AEW staff or talent to submit anonymous complaints, which, presumably would be a good thing, so that you didn't have to worry about whether or not there would be retaliation against you because you made a complaint, if you could make it anonymously and minimize that? And I'm told that there is a way for AEW wrestlers, talent, and staff to make an anonymous complaint. There's a third-party service that AEW uses. I can't say for sure whether everybody's aware of it, but it's something that has been emailed out to people, that is something that is available to them. So there's that. And then there's discussion on this call of the media rights, which we'll play. I believe this is in response to a question that Dave Meltzer asked Tony about media rights. Long answer, but here's a portion of Tony Khan's response, talking about basically sounding very confident that AEW is not only going to get a raise in media rights fees domestically, which are being renegotiated right now, it's going to expire, the current deal is going to expire at the end of the year, but not just a raise, but a huge, huge raise, in his words.
I think the biggest opportunity lies in the media rights renewal, where Dynamite, Rampage, and Collision will all be getting huge, huge increases, I can say for sure. And now going into that and having, like I said, that confidence, I think 25 is going to go down as the year where AEW really took the leap from being a startup company to being the established challenger player in pro wrestling for decades to come, and establishing all that in basically 5 years. That was the 5-year plan.
And there's Tony Khan. Why is a really big increase in TV rights fees important? Probably because, probably AEW is not profitable in its current form, but it's a company that's about 5 years old now. But if they get a strong upgrade in TV rights fees, AEW, if it's a strong enough increase, will become profitable. I think if they get their rights, say, doubled, which I think is a realistic notion, then AEW will probably become profitable. And this is what Tony Khan is hyping here, is that if they get a huge, whatever that means, what does huge, huge mean, by the way? Let's try to translate that into a factor. What's a huge, huge increase? Is it a 40% increase? Is it a 30% increase? A 10% increase? Or is it a 2x increase? Is it a 3x increase? A 4x increase? What's huge, huge in his mind? Furthermore, a deal's not done. So what makes him so confident that is going to be a huge, huge increase? There's no deal done with WBD. but maybe they've given him enough of an impression that they're going to give him a strong raise, you know, apparently. I would think what would be huge, huge to me, much bigger than what's huge, huge, I would think, to Tony. I would think my read from that is, like, if you're hyping that up as huge, huge, then I'm expecting 2x, maybe. But we'll see what happens. There was also discussion on the press conference after AEW Revolution last night, technically today, let's be honest, where he said that AEW and WBD are still in their exclusive negotiating period. We'll listen to that audio here.
Haley Miller from comicbook.com. So as, you know, AEW continues to expand on, you know, more pay-per-views and new and exciting content, it is a contract renewing year. So I have to ask, have talks begun between AEW and Warner Brothers Discovery? And have any other interested parties kind of been involved either?
Well, we're still in this exclusive phase with Warner Brothers Discovery, which has been amazing for AEW, and very excited about the rest of 2024. And I think 2024, we're really rising to the occasion. This has been a great year and it's going to keep going. And very proud about what we've been delivering on TBS and TNT week out. And Warner Brothers Discovery and AEW have really built a close relationship. And the current management group came in and has embraced AEW even more than ever before. We were already on such great footing, and now we've come in this past year. We've gone from 3 hours of TV across Wednesday and Friday. We added Collision, and we've added more pay-per-view events with great success. Again, very excited April 21st to add Dynasty to what is already, I believe, the best slate of events in pro wrestling, the AEW pay-per-views. And certainly now, I would say, you know, it's a great time for us with Warner Brothers Discovery. We've been doing great things, and the conversations have gone really well. And I'm very, very happy to be here at Warner Brothers Discovery. And certainly, I think they're very happy to have us, and we'll see what happens. But certainly, we're still in that exclusive phase of what is the most important year ever in AEW's history.
So what that means, in my understanding, decoding what he's saying there, is that AEW can't negotiate at this moment with anybody else other than Warner Brothers Discovery for its US TV rights. And that window will end sometime. It's getting pretty close to the end of the contract. We've got less than a year left on the contract. I believe it expires now based on things that he said at the very end of the year, not in the fall. Somebody out there can correct me if I'm wrong. Who knows? But so I think when does the exclusive window end then? How long is the non-exclusive window? 6 months before termination? Maybe in July? In any case, I think there is a possibility, like I've said this before, I think there is a possibility that one of or two of the shows that AEW has, they have three, I think there's a possibility that one or two may end up outside of the WBD world. Like Fox is a possibility. I don't know that there are any other really strong possibilities. But then again, if you would have talked to me a few months ago, I would have told you there's no way WWE's going to Netflix. So maybe a digital player is something that shouldn't be ruled out either, whether it's Amazon Prime or other digital player would there really be for one of their weekly shows. I think in addition to there being three weekly TV shows, there are also streaming rights. You got to get AEW pay-per-views off of Bleacher Report and maybe put them onto a service like Max, maybe along with a library deal. There's those handful of rights that are not being monetized in any way, next day pay-per-view and library, that most likely, I think, will stay in the WBD universe on Max alongside Sopranos and various other of Tony Khan's favorite programs. So there's that's going to not only help AEW get a better deal because they're monetizing more content that is hardly monetized at all. But maybe you've got a situation where, I don't know, just to throw out a scenario, Dynamite and the streaming rights stay with WBD, and maybe Rampage and Collision go elsewhere. So I will tell you what the SmackDown rating was now. Let's see if I can show you the actual big chart here. As I look to find the chart, I'm going to show you this directly in Matplotlib, which is the library that I use to make this chart here. So this is the answer. We've got you can't quite see the demo. I'll get that logo out of the way here. 2 million. This is SmackDown's rating for Fox on Friday with The Rock and Roman Reigns occupying the first 40 minutes of this program. 2,348,000 viewers, 2.348 million viewers, a 0.64 in the demo. What does this mean compared to last? This is up from last week's number, which was kind of a lame duck show going in front of Elimination Chamber, a tape show. So this is not going to be a highest benchmark, but this is a number that's what, if you look at the line chart here, it's within the realm of what they were doing several weeks ago, but not in the realm of these really elevated numbers that they had been doing before the pre-Elimination Chamber show. So while I'm at it here, am I able to look at quarter hours? Because I don't know that I've got another audio clip where I'm going to be able to filibuster. But if I just take a look, I'm not going to show you anything, but I can tell you the first three quarters of SmackDown were very elevated. I'll have a report later for subscribers breaking down the quarter hours. But what I'm looking at here, I'll tell you this, the peak quarter hour was the third quarter hour, which would entail the very end of that 40-minute segment if it did go 40 minutes. And in fact, I can look at Jason Purser's quarter hour labels to corroborate that. But anyway, the third quarter hour, while it's loading, third quarter hour did 2.752 million viewers, a 0.75 demo rating. And I will check the quarter hours here, and we do go into that that third quarter. Some of that third quarter, the latter part of that third quarter, though, for SmackDown did have a backstage angle involving Austin Theory, Grayson Waller, Randy Orton, and an ad break. 2.7 million viewers is a high quarter hour. Again, I'll break that down in a more digestible way in visual form soon after I'm done with the podcast here. So we'll move. I think that's all I had to talk about AEW Revolution. Let me check here before we get into TKO. Is that everything? I think so. Okay. So we'll go to TKO, where if you noticed that, as I'm sure everybody listening has been visiting the TKO Investor Relations website, and I'm sure you've noticed, like I have, that they're no longer doing the green TKO logo. Now they've graded out basically to be a gray, black and white TKO logo. Anyway, we did a report, you know, with we had a talk on Pollock & Thurston this past Wednesday, going over various details coming out of the TKO earnings call. I did a written version of that too. That's on WrestleNomics.com and on the Patreon. I think that's now visible and free for everyone. There's an additional thing that I noticed here, an additional item that I noticed in the 10K. 10K is an annual report. It's long. It's published once a year, and it has lots of information in it. It's longer than a quarterly report. And there's this segment here, and it says, this is under their risk factors. So every publicly traded company lists a number of risk factors just to protect itself, just to say, hey, we told you so, there was this risk factor. Don't blame us shareholders if your shares go down in value. And one of these risk factors that they list, which and these are all pertinent and customized to the company, right? And one of these risk factors, and this has been a risk factor for a long time now, almost 2 years, is headed the Special Committee of Independent Members of WWE's Board of Directors investigation into allegations of misconduct by Mr. McMahon and any further allegations, claims, or investigations may have an adverse financial and operational impact on our business performance. Okay, that's nothing new in itself, but there is one paragraph within that heading, within that risk factor, that is new to me, and it reads, we're going to read a lot of documents today. It's going to be fun. Subsequent to WWE's restatement of the unrecorded expenses, hold, okay, unrecorded expenses refers to the 19, how many millions? It was 19 point something million. Do I have that number in my notes here? it was not 14.6 plus 5. That's 19.6 million. So as we all know, flashback to the summer of 2022, $19.6 million of unrecorded expenses that Vince McMahon used his personal funding for. He used personal money to pay for $19.6 million in mostly NDA settlements, but also some money that he gave to Donald Trump via the Trump Foundation in exchange for his performances in 2007 and 2009, including the Battle of the Billionaires. Yes. So there's not $19.6 million. Okay, so that's okay. Now we go back to read the thing. Subsequent to WWE's restatement for the unrecorded expenses, that money that I just talked about, WWE was informed of certain additional claims which have been settled by Mr. McMahon. WWE recorded an additional $11.1 million of expenses related to these additional claims prior to the closing of the transactions. That means before the merger was completed, which is September 12th, prior to the closure of the merger, WWE recorded an additional $11.1 million of expenses related to these additional claims. Okay. Since the closing of the transaction, since the merger completion of TKO on September 12th, the company, TKO, has recorded an additional $3.5 million of expenses related to these additional claims. So I don't know if I should add together that 11.1 and 3.5, which would come to, 14.6 anyway, which is strangely like the same number of the same amount of money that he had in NDA settlements. Anyway, Mr. McMahon has made or will make all related payments personally. So Vince is going to pay for all these expenses, all this money that he owes. He's going to pay for it personally, but because it benefited the company, because these NDAs were meant to protect the company, WWE and therefore TKO have to record this and recognize this as an expense. It's not going to come out of their own cash, but they're essentially charging Vince for the payments that he agreed to make. So this tells me that there's additional payments that Vince has promised to make to someone or something in addition to the $14.6 million that we knew about, which was related to, again, Trump, and it was related to four NDAs. One set of payments was owed to who we know to be now Janelle Grant. Another one was owed to a former WWE manager, a former WWE employee, a former WWE talent. Those are the ones that we got disclosure of sort of indirectly through WWE filings and then through reporting by the Wall Street Journal. Now, subsequent to that, there was additional reporting by the Wall Street Journal about a settlement that was made with Rhea Chatterton, who accuses Vince McMahon of rape that allegedly occurred in 1986. Rhea Chatterton was looking for an $11.75 million settlement. The Wall Street Journal later reported that they did come to a settlement, which was multiple millions of dollars, but less than the 11.75 that she was looking for. So we don't know a number, but it was multiple millions, but less than 11.75 million. The Wall Street Journal also reported that a California spa manager, and this is a new allegation when it was reported at the time, I believe late 2022, a California spa manager accuses Vince McMahon of assaulting her in, I believe the year is 2011. Someone representing the California spa manager and Vince's lawyers were also negotiating a settlement. There was never a report on whether they came to some sort of monetary settlement or if anything happened there. Seems quite possible they came to a settlement. It just hasn't been reported. So those are some possible answers to the question of what's this 11.1 or maybe $14.6 million of additional money related to. But then there's something even weirder, because you read on, as I'm sure we all did, read every single word of the 10K from TKO. You read on in this heading that is simply Vince McMahon, where it discusses various things, and it gets into he resigned, and he controls a significant amount of voting power. Okay. But then there's this paragraph which reads, in connection with the acquisition of WWE, the company assumed $3.5 million of liabilities, of future payments owed by Mr. McMahon, money that he owes to certain counterparties, of which he paid $2 million during the period from September 12th to the end of the year. During the period of September 12th to the end of the year, the company recorded $3.5 million of expenses associated with payments made directly by Mr. McMahon to certain counterparties. So that does read to me as 11.1 plus 3.5. In any case, reading on, this is where it gets weirder. These costs are included within selling, general, and administrative expenses, SG&A, for those in the know, in our consolidated statements of operations. Additionally, this underlined in purple for those watching a video, additionally, during the period of September 12th through December 31st, the company recorded $3.5 million of costs associated with payments made directly by Mr. McMahon related to WWE's global headquarters lease. These costs are included within finance, lease, right of use assets, net in our consolidated balance sheets. And I just have no answer to explain that. So what I'm reading here is Vince used his personal money, $3.5 million worth, for something related to WWE's headquarters lease. You know, they just moved headquarters. I have no idea what that is about. I sent a message to TKO PR and IR, and I didn't get a response. So I don't know what's going on there. That's interesting. Why would he spend $3.5 million of his own money towards the headquarters lease? Okay. And that's my Vince McMahon discussion for today. While we're mentioning Vince McMahon and his alleged misdeeds, I will speak with John Pollock on Wednesday for Pollock and Thurston, and we will go through the response to the records request that several reporters got in response to a records request that was made to NCIS, to the Naval Investigation Organization, about the investigation into allegations of rape made by Ashley Massaro. She alleges that she was raped on a overseas tour, goodwill tour, where she was in Kuwait. So we will go through those materials on Wednesday.
You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Now, here he is. You know, Ken Paxton, the Texas Attorney General, you know, he may be in favor of gerrymandering. However, he has multiplied the spending to fight human trafficking, regardless of whether or not there's been any convictions to those charges. This is a guy who loves gasoline, and he is being sued by WWE. This lawsuit that I talked about a little bit on Wednesday, but we'll go a bit deeper in it today. WWE is suing the office of, I would say, I mean, I don't know if they're suing him personally, but they're suing Ken Paxton, the Attorney General of Texas. And this is in relation to a records request that I made over a year ago related to the Royal Rumble 2023 in San Antonio. I got quite a bit of records back from the city of San Antonio. They own and operate the Alamo Dome where the Royal Rumble took place. They also made a deal with WWE to bring the event to the municipality and probably because of all the benefits that they would expect related to, you know, hotel use, restaurant use, and things like that. And I got the tickets, I got tickets information, I got ticket sales information, attendance information. We got emails between WE staff and city staff, calculating the announced attendance number. And that was all reported at the time. I think it was a couple months after the Royal Rumble 2023 happened. And the city requested to the state, because this is a state law, the Public Records Law, PIA in this case, Public Information Act in Texas, is a state law. So if you want to get qualified for an exemption, which there are exemptions under those laws, certain things which can be defined as trade secrets do not have to be disclosed. The city went to the state and said, we don't want to disclose this bidding contract because this is a trade secret, essentially. And they got approval for that. In April, they were told, no, you don't have to disclose this to the nosy Brandon Thurston. This is fine. And then another party came forward. I don't know. I'll read pieces of this lawsuit that I want to read. This was filed. This is dated February 16th. So I learned about it, though, last week when I got an email from the attorney, the law firm that is representing WE in this case. I was told, because I'm making some calls to the Texas Attorney General's office, at least as of Thursday, the Attorney General's office had not been served yet. So they don't, since they haven't been served yet, they don't have any lawyers yet who are assigned to this. So anyway, we'll read from sections of WB's complaint here. Where they're filing a petition for declaratory judgment against Ken Paxton in accordance with the Texas Government Code, which is the Public Information Act, seeking a declaratory judgment, an injunction, so the injunction so they don't have to release this information in the judgment so that they never have to, and for any future substantially similar requests for the release of their contract, which is referred to here as September 6, 2022, Alamo Dome License Agreement for WE's 2023 Royal Rumble. So the date there is a little bit interesting to me because that gives you an idea of how far in advance at least this agreement was made relative to when the event took place. I believe the event took place January 28, 2023, and they made this agreement some, 4 months in advance? So it gives you an idea of how, to me, that's important because often when I make records requests, I have to give them a timeline. So 4 months in advance is when they made that agreement, roughly. As background information here, as part of the lawsuit that's described here by WB, is on February 20th, WB received notice because I had to rewrite the request. I forget why. It was not specific enough or something. Or it was too broad. It was kind of a weird experience to make this records request because at first they told me that it was going to cost me money. And then, I don't know, like suddenly later, I just got some records. Anyway, here's what WE writes in their lawsuit. On February 20th, 2023, WE received notice from the city of San Antonio of a public information request from Mr. Brandon Thurston, the author of a wrestling blog called WrestleNomics, which reports on professional wrestling, including financial information and statistics for WWE's events. The request sought, quote, public records related to the WWE Royal Rumble, including information about attendance, sales, and communications between the city and WWE. The city objected to the disclosure of the agreement, the contract between WWE and the Alamo Dome, which would contain what? Which would contain, I don't know what, obviously. Within the contract is what they're saying is where the trade secret information is. Presumably, this would include what the city of San Antonio agreed to pay to WWE as a bidding fee, as a site fee to bring WWE to San Antonio. If you don't already know, WWE is trying to get their premium live events to the point where every single one has a site fee attached to it, and many already do. We know the Elimination Chamber, which just took place in Perth, had some sort of site fee associated with it. We know Backlash, which happened in San Juan, Puerto Rico last year, which we'll talk about later, had a site fee attached to it. We know that the Clash of the Castle in Cardiff had a site fee attached to it. We've never seen records, I don't think, but we know that WrestleMania, I believe that WrestleMania has a site fee attached to it, which would be the biggest of all, because it's the biggest event of all, and it has all these surrounding events associated with it. Anyway, the city objected in the disclosure of the agreement to the disclosure of the agreement, and on April 28th, 2023, the Office of the Attorney General published an open records letter accepting the document from disclosure, meaning they don't have to give it to Brandon Thurston. So there's that. I figured it was all done, but then they go on, and this was all happening unbeknownst to me, is that on October 12th, 2023, W received a notice from the city of another public information request. This second requester sought documents and communications concerning, quote, all bids, requests for proposals, contracts, and agreements, end quote, related to the WWE and the city's venues from 2015 to the present, and all complaints regarding the WWE from 2015 to the present. This request is now moot, as it was seeking information in connection to a lawsuit that has now been settled. That doesn't really narrow it down to what lawsuit, though, it's referring to, because during the fall and winter of 2023, I know of three lawsuits that were settled involving WWE, the Panini lawsuit, the trading card licensee. Does this fit that in terms of why would Panini want all bids, requests for proposals, contracts, and agreements? I know it was a contract dispute, but I mean, who knows? We know that there was the Brittany Abrams versus WWE racial discrimination lawsuit, a former writer suing WWE and various writers and named defendants directly. That was settled within the window of this time frame. I did ask Brittany Abraham's lawyer whether this was related. Derek Sells, he did not want to tell me. He said he couldn't discuss anything involving his client's case. If there were complaints or issues, maybe that would help them in make a case for their client. I don't know. And then there's the MLW lawsuit, which I could see why the MLW side might be interested in finding agreements between WWE and venues, and maybe that would help their antitrust case. If, you know, as the argument would be that WWE tries to close out other wrestling organizations from their venues. But I did ask Court Bauer, and he said he didn't know anything about who this Intelligence Options was, which is the party that made this request. In any case, what W is saying here is that this requester was making this request because of a lawsuit that's now settled, so they don't need it anymore. And then it goes on. In response, the city submitted an objection, and WB submitted an objection in November through their outside counsel, Jennifer Oliver. W's brief argued that the two exceptions to the Public Information Act apply to the contested documents in this case. And they go through the law here. This certain section pertains to confidentiality of trade secrets and certain commercial or financial information, and another section of the law, which pertains to confidentiality of proprietary information. The brief explained that the agreement constitutes a trade secret under the law because it contains proprietary information of WWE, which, one, would advantage competitors if released, two, the WWE has taken reasonable measures to keep secret, and three, has independent economic value in not being known or easily ascertainable by competitors. It further explained that the relevant documents should be accepted under the code because they deal with the WWE's approach to pricing, discounts, organizational structure, internal operations, and more as a vendor. So what they're referring to here is the letter that was written by the Attorney General's office by an assistant Attorney General named Michelle Garza, where she writes, where is the pertinent section here, is that the government code accepts from disclosure information submitted to a government body by a vendor, contractor, potential vendor, or potential contractor in response to a request for a bid, proposal, or qualification. Additionally, we note section 552.1101 lists certain types of information which that section, to which another section does not apply. Here's the important part as I ramble here. Upon review, we find WWE has failed to demonstrate the applicability of section 552.1101A to its information. Accordingly, the city may not withhold that contract, basically, is what it's saying there. I want to find the Texas government code here. I want to find that exact paragraph here that it's referring to. We got four references to it. So I see B here, but I don't know that I see A. So I don't know that I'm going to be able to find what we need to look at here. In any case, going further on in this lawsuit here, we have paragraph 13 where it says the agreement is exempt from disclosure under Texas government code because this section exempts trade secrets from disclosure. The Act defines trade secrets as all forms of, and types of information if the owner of the trade secret has taken reasonable measures under circumstances to keep secret, and two, the information derives independent economic value, actual potential, from not being generally known to and not being readily ascertainable through proper means by another person who can obtain economic value. This would be competitors. What competitors do they have in mind? I don't know if they necessarily have competitors, other wrestling organizations in mind. But in some respects, I suppose, yes. I think there's at least two things that I can imagine being an issue here for WWE, realistically, which is if other wrestling organizations knew what certain agreements were between WWE and their venues, they could then go to those venues and book. And if, when they go to try to book those venues, they could say, give me what you gave WWE, because I know because of this public report here by WrestleNomics or whatever, that's what you gave WWE. That's one issue with actual other wrestling companies, or maybe other, not even wrestling companies. I suppose it matters because it's wrestling companies in WWE's case, because they have an interest in being advantaged over their competitors. The other issue here is that other bidders, other municipalities would have an idea of what this agreement was, and then they would know what the going rate is for, in this case, Royal Rumble. And they could extrapolate from there on what the other events, I suppose, were worth, even though a lot of that information is already known anyway. But what's being argued here in this complaint, which is written by their lawyers and it's just, you know, it is from WWE, is also supported in... Do I want to read through all this? I don't know that we need to read through all this, do we? I suppose not. I'll read this part, though. It's being supported by a declaration from Chris LaGentle, who is Senior Vice President, Head of Global Communications for WWE, who writes lots of things here, including what do we want to say here. The agreement contains WWE trade secrets that we have intentionally kept secret as sensitive and competitively advantageous information about our internal practices and negotiations with venues. This internal information pertains to our financial terms with venues, ticketing information, and staffing details, including names of employees. The agreement reveals WWE's proposed percentage splits, fee structures, waivers and reimbursements to the venue and comparables, and the Royal Rumble's estimated value and economic impact. Even within WWE, these terms are discussed only by a select group of internal personnel on a need-to-know basis, and the fully executed agreements are shared only with relevant personnel in WWE's finance department and saved on a drive that is accessible only by the legal department. If this information was made publicly available and Brandon Thurston was permitted to publicize our financial information, negotiated terms on WrestleNomics, WWE would lose its bargaining power in negotiating all of our live events and much of the value of a bidding process for venues. And Chris LaGentle is writing this under oath. So under penalty of perjury, right? Declared as true. So that's sort of just making explicit what I was saying earlier about why WWE would be interested in keeping their splits, their financial information, these particular deals that they made with the city of San Antonio. They don't want that to be public. So let's talk about what's already public. And what's already public is the Royal Rumble this year, which took place, and I was there, at Tropicana Field, just outside Tampa Bay in St. Petersburg, Clearwater, Florida. That local municipality, that local tourism board, paid $500,000 in a site fee. That was reported by the local media there. We know, because of my reporting, that backlash... because of a public records request that I made, that Backlash had a site fee, all told, of about $1.8 million. $1.5 million in cash and an additional $300,000 value, which was they were allowed to use the venue for free. And then we know Clash of the Castle, as I run through all this, Clash of the Castle, the Welsh government put out a press release last year, April, where they said, this is the headline from their own press release, even though they denied a information request from a local reporter there. But anyway, they write in their own press release on their own government website, WWE's Clash of the Castle event in Cardiff in 2022 delivered a massive 10-to-1 return on investment by channeling 21.8 squiggly items, British pounds, back into the Welsh economy, a new report shows. So this is the Welsh government saying, look at this economic impact study. look at how great this Clash of the Castle event was for our local government or for our local economy. The government did this for you. The government's doing a great job. That's what they're trying to say there. So 10 to 1 return on investment by channeling 21.8 million Great British pounds means, I don't know, just divide it by 10, right? You get 2.18 million pounds, which comes out to, in U.S. dollars, about $2.8 million. So that gives you an idea what Clash of the Castle was worth. Maybe it's more because it's overseas. Or maybe they just didn't know what the going rate was. I don't know. And this was earlier, right? This is the earliest of these, of the three that we have on the screen right now. Clash of the Castle 2022 was the earliest of compared to Backlash 2023 and this year's Royal Rumble. And actually, astute listeners may remember, and we talked about this at the time, there was a meeting with Orange County government in Orlando, which is the county where Orlando is located, where there was a pitch to bring this year's Royal Rumble to Orlando, and an $850,000 bid was approved. It ended up not going to Orlando. As we know, it went to St. Pete Clearwater instead, and it looks like that was the case because the Pro Bowl happened at Camping World Stadium instead, and you probably couldn't do early February Pro Bowl and do late January Royal Rumble in the same stadium. Probably too much overlap in the load in and load out or something. So that may explain why WWE went with $500,000 to do the Royal Rumble in St. Pete Clearwater as opposed to $850,000 to do it in Orlando. So we don't know from this March 2023 meeting, almost a year old, this is late March, that this meeting was held. And Florida is a very open state when it comes to public records and the openness of government meetings like this. So we do have video of this, and I'm going to show you some screenshots, essentially, of presentation slides where they're showing a lot of information related to, you know, the pitch of why this is a good idea, why these government officials that are being pitched, they should approve of this $850,000 bid. And what's being presented here is there's great value if we bring the Royal Rumble to Orlando, because look at last year's Royal Rumble in San Antonio, 2023. And they're saying, this is not all like super sourced in terms of like, this is where this number is from. This is where this number is from. This is what they're telling the officials here in Orange County. $33.6 million of generated media value to host the city of San Antonio. On TV. This is talking about how WWE's TV programs promoted the city of San Antonio. If you were to buy this as advertising, what would it cost? And they're saying it's $33.6 million. There's $27.5 million through just being on TV on Raw and SmackDown. There's $4.7 million of live event advertising to the people who were there in attendance. There's broadcast PR value of $1.1 million. There's social media value. So the lowest of all, a measly $300,000. So that really promoted the city of San Antonio to everybody who watched or attended a WWE live event, or they just were the subject of impressions of broadcast public relations or social and digital media. So then there's more. We have event history for the trailing four Royal Rumbles that actually occurred in front of fans. And there's attendance listed here. There's estimated room nights. So how many nights were given hotel room rented surrounding this event and reportedly because of this event? We've got 2,000 room nights, 2005 for the San Antonio Rumble. The year prior, it's 1,769. The 2 years prior, 2020, just before COVID interruption, in Houston, it's 1,671. I won't read through all these numbers. There's Phoenix on here too at over 2,000, which is actually higher than the other two. Was the Phoenix Rumble in a stadium? I think it had to have been, right? Because I think they had started running Rumble in a stadium by that point, because 2017 was also in the Alamo Dome. Anyway, and what are these citations make me think that some of this information came directly from WWE, because this point here where they're using three asterisks. Asterisk says W does not report economic impact for the Royal Rumble, but did engage Enigma Research to complete a study of on SummerSlam and a like event staged annually by WWE. Enigma reported the 2021 SummerSlam, which was where? Las Vegas. Staged in Las Vegas, generated an estimated $69.8 million of economic impact. So there's some information that's public because this is a public meeting. And now I guess I'm talking about it and talked about it last year when we found out about it. This is a chart showing, hey, look, we have sort of this gap here where we have an average number of room nights throughout the year, just to show you and just to show you that the timing when Royal Rumble would take place, we are performing below average in terms of the number of rooms we have rented out. So this is why it would really fill a gap to have the Royal Rumble in here, to have people traveling in from outside of Orlando and using hotel rooms. And that would help us, you know, fill a lot of vacancies that are just sitting there. So this is sort of guidelines of what this particular government entity, what they'll authorize and based on, you know, what kind of baselines does this event have to deliver in order for us to justify a certain amount of money. And this is just showing that the minimum attendees has to be 50,000. And for the Royal Rumble, it's pretty close to 50,000. But if you're, if you're tying in people who are attending not as ticket goers, but as staff and venue workers, maybe room nights is well over 35,000. That more than meets the requirement. And the economic impact, though, is not over 50 million, but it's right in the middle, 10 to 50, because of what? Because of what? They're saying the media value is 33. Anyway, although SummerSlam, if you got SummerSlam in 2021 doing about 70 million, it's going to do more than that. I don't know about these economic impact studies, though, to begin with. But anyway, we'll skip past that one. I know that one's very informative. This slide, I believe, is related to taxes on hotel rooms. As I've had to book a few hotel rooms recently, you'll notice that the taxes that they charge when you book a hotel room is pretty high. And we'll just skip to this slide. Where is it here? That the tourism tax dollars recovery would be 0.6 to 1. So basically they're saying 60% of what you're going to pay here, if you're going to pay $850,000, well, 60% of it is going to be recovered directly by just taxes from people incrementally renting rooms. That's what that's about. And yeah, I think that. Okay. So, and then we have more stuff about room nights here. And then we have, interestingly, maybe more information that has never been reported before, other than in this slide, which is public, that the Royal Rumble viewership in 2022 was among people 18 and older. And is this Peacock? Is this globally? It doesn't say. And this has got to come from WWE, I would think. I don't think NBC Universal is giving them this information, and basically nobody else knows it, I would think. 18 and over, 2022, Royal Rumble was viewed by 1.2 million adults. The following year, 1.3 million adults. And then, you know, watch for the percentage difference that TKO might report in the Q1 report, which will be like in May or something, and you can maybe do the math here. But then they give more events to give you an idea of where does Royal Rumble stand in the hierarchy of WWE premium live events. Of course, WrestleMania is number one in 2022. 1.5 million adults watched it, but Royal Rumble was number two, 1.2 million. And then you have SummerSlam, a million. Survivor Series War Games in 2022, 940,000. Extreme Rules, 802,000. Backlash, 766,000. Hell in a Cell, 758,000. Is this average, you know, average minute? What kind of calculation is really happening here? I don't know, because we're not, this is not being tracked by Nielsen. Are we talking about the average number of people who are watching throughout the entire duration of the programming? That's what TV ratings are that we report. Or is this the number of people who watched at least some of it? Because it could be a big difference between those two things. And then we have some CPMs here, which I will have mercy on you by not reading an audio. There's all that. And then we have, what else is public? And then we have, I got as a result of the records request that I made to the local government in Puerto Rico, I have the venue agreement between WWE and the Puerto Rican government, which is called, this entity is called Puerto Rico Convention Center District Authority. What do we learn from this agreement? We learn that there's a sponsorship fee. It was $925,000 of it was paid up front. $575,000 of it was paid later. I believe that's what it says, right? And I read this earlier today. Basically, it paid some of it in one installment and the rest of it in another installment. This is the $1.5 million in a sponsorship fee, site fee, that the Puerto Rican government paid WWE to have Backlash and SmackDown the night before. The government was guaranteed all of this ad space as well, graphics at the arena, the 5 weeks leading up to the events on both Raw and SmackDown, opening graphics at WrestleMania 39, at least 6 posts on W social media, in programming mentions and event exposure in on Raw, SmackDown, and at WrestleMania 39, 17 million impressions across digital channels, which is a lot, and it's wonderful. And then there's local promotion, TV commercials promoting WWE Puerto Rico events on SmackDown and Backlash, billboards, radio spots, newspaper. This is just the, I think this is about the permission that WWE has to place the authority, the government-provided logo. WWE will work with Move Concerts, the local promoter of record for events, to promote the events via promoters' social media pages, and will promote the events via local WWE page promotion. And there will also be public relations efforts, extensive media outreach throughout the 2 months leading to the events, that is the SmackDown and the Backlash, the week of the events, and after the live broadcast events. I believe they were even, if I have it here, yeah. Okay, and then there's assets as part of the events. Part of this is that there's all these banners that are to be inside of the Coliseum, at least 4 TV commercials and screens before the events start. A total of 1,000 tickets will be given to the government free of charge. Basically, they get 1,000 comps. They get one sponsor, 30-second commercial spot to be broadcast in one episode of Friday Night SmackDown, one episode of Monday Night Raw, and each night of WrestleMania. And at least four W superstars will showcase Puerto Rico through their own social media channels and or W platforms before, during, and or after the events. Okay. And they will do a community event as well. And this is confidential as part of this contract. Does that sound scary? Oh my God. Am I publishing right now something that is confidential? Am I in trouble? Well, let's read this, this clause here. Confidentiality. The parties agree to keep strictly confidential any proprietary or confidential information disclosed or learned by the other party in connection with this agreement, including financial information, reports, business plans, documents, and any other information related to the business of either party, including the terms of this agreement, except to the extent necessary to comply with applicable laws or valid order of a court. I think my public information request, which is questionable because of a law, would fall into that. So that's that. That's what's happening there. My point in going through all that is that, look, there's a lot of public information here already that WrestleNomics has already published in one form or another. But who knows what's in that San Antonio bidding agreement? It might be something, maybe the secrets of the earth in there. And what's been speculated to me is that there could be blackout dates to prevent other pro wrestling organizations from running the Alamo Dome within X days of this event or something like that. Okay, moving on as we, oh my God, we've been going for an hour. This will end soon. We have W Shop merchandise estimates, estimated for the recently completed month of February. Number one is Cody Rhodes. Number two is CM Punk. Number three is Jey Uso. Number four is Roman Reigns. Number five is Randy Orton. Number six is The Rock. If you don't know how I do this, is there's a program that checks W Shop every single day, and it looks at the best sellers. This is apparel only, it's t-shirts, basically. It goes through the best sellers list, and it records the order that the best sellers items are in, assuming this is an honest ranking of what the best selling items actually are is a question. But assuming that, I calculate that in, and I calculate a reverse rank value, and we get things such as Cody Rhodes being number one for this month, which I believe he was ranked number one for the full year of 2023 as well. In the AEW world, we get the AEW brand out here as number one. There are just more AEW branded things than I can find, at least in apparel for WWE. If we were looking beyond apparel, I think we would see WWE's brand rank much higher. Doesn't get in the top 10 here. In any case, after AEW, for Shop AEW is Sting. In a month where he's retiring, which makes a lot of sense, right? Followed by Bullet Club Gold, followed by Swerve Strickland. And in fact, if we combine these Sting these partial Sting items, such as Sting versus JP. I don't know what that is, but it's some sort of combination item. And Sting and Darby Allin. Sting would outrank AEW in this, so you could... It's ambiguous. You could certainly calculate this in a way that you should say Sting outranked AEW here. That's the merch. That's a monthly thing that I put out for subscribers. And then we have Johan Promotions. The Johan Promotions press release that the AEW sent out about how their pay-per-view is going to be played in bars and restaurants, noticeably omitted. Not airing in theaters. Apparently not any longer. And I think we do have a tweet from one at Mookie Ghana. I think I've heard of him. He's Chris Harrington. I think he actually created WrestleNomics. He's the former co-host of this podcast pre 2019, who now works for AEW. And he said that the decision to not run pay-per-views at theaters was his call. He wrote on Twitter here, lots of moving parts, but it's a tough space, especially with movie release schedules ramping back up. And there are particular music licensing rights, which are disproportionately costly for servicing those venues against low ROI. So in other words, if you're going to have Sting come out to Metallica, you got to pay for that, of course. You got to pay for that to have it in the venue. You got to pay for that to stream it and broadcast it on television. And if you're going to put it in a theater, there's a separate cost to put it in a theater. So this is why, for one reason, it's more costly to just license music if you're going to do popular music like AEW has, whether that's Metallica, Seek and Destroy, or whether that's the Final Countdown by Europe. So I understand that there's a live broadcast cost. So there's a separate live broadcast cost to this that is separate from the pay-per-view itself. To get this in the theater, you have to... There is some cost associated with getting the transmission into the theater. And you're also competing with other movies, essentially. So you've got to, you know, convince the theater that for the 6 hours or whatever that AEW is going to occupy this theater room for, that it's going to sell better than a movie would in its place. This is why, for example, I believe we didn't get All in theaters, because that was like International Movie Day or something like that, where movies were all cheap. And I don't think they could justify putting AEW in the theater instead of those movies. And Johan takes a cut because Johan Promotions is making these relationships happen, is making the AEW pay-per-views get into the theaters. And that's the justification. I guess the notion is that you weren't making that much money on closed circuit pay-per-view in the first place. But the idea is that, well, if you get somebody to watch this who wouldn't normally, and maybe they watch a couple pay-per-views at home later where the margin of profitability is much higher, well, then it's worth it, even though this is a really low margin business, which they're not going to continue to do anyway. So there's that. I'm going to end the podcast now. Once again, if you want to listen next week, patreon.com/WrestleNomics is how you listen to this podcast every week, where you can hear me recite numbers and maybe say a few interesting things as well. This is the kind of content, if you're watching a video, that we had out just last week, the estimated WShop AEW e-commerce merchandise rankings, quarter hours. I can tell you quarter hours for SmackDown, and a full show report for SmackDown will be up shortly. We had audio of the Tony Khan media call, quarter hours and show report for Dynamite, for NXT, for Raw, for SmackDown, for Rampage. Some coverage of the TKO earnings call, etc. Just to give you an idea of what's there. You get slides that I'm going through right now as well. So thanks everybody for listening and tuning in. There's something nice and heartfelt I wanted to say to all listeners too, but I now forget what it is. But thanks everybody for supporting, whether you're a subscriber or not, or whether you're just watching for free, that I'm able to do this WrestleNomics related work, and that it's not free to make this business go and to pay for everything that needs to be paid for, including sometimes traveling to these events so I can ask one question or two questions maybe. And that's because of the listeners that we have here. And I guess just sort of thinking in light of the layoffs that we've seen from, you know, Vice and the Wall Street Journal, two outlets, in fact, that have done a lot of important wrestling related reporting of late. And there's some people who've done wrestling related reporting who were laid off recently. But fortunately I am not laid off, and I'm still able to do this reporting for you. So if you appreciate it, it's helpful to have your support. So I will be back on Wednesday with Pollock and Thurston on all post-wrestling and WrestleNomics platforms. Talk to you then.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.